typed it himself, he would place a copy on every desk at Wiley and Beck. The gravity of their scheme hit hard the next day, just after dinner. It was entirely possible to enjoy Christmas without cards, without parties and dinners, without needless gifts, without a lot of things that for some reason had been piled onto the birth of Christ. But how could anyone get through the holidays without a tree? Skip the tree, and Luther knew they just might pull it off. They were clearing the table, though there was precious little to clear. Baked chicken and cottage cheese made for an easy cleanup, and Luther was still hungry when the doorbell rang. "I'll get it," he said. Through the front window of the living room, he saw the trailer out in the street, and he knew instantly that the next 15 minutes would not be pleasant. He opened the door and was met with three smiling faces. Two youngsters dressed smartly in full Boy Scout regalia, and behind them Mr. Scanlon, the neighborhood's permanent scoutmaster. He, too, was in uniform. "Good evening," Luther said to the kids.
"Hello, Mr. Crank. I'm Randy Bogan," said the taller of the two. "We're selling Christmas trees again this year."
"Got yours out on the trailer," said the shorter one.
"You had a Canadian blue spruce last year," Mr. Scanlon said. Luther glanced beyond them to the long flatbed trailer covered with two neat rows of trees. A small army of scouts was busy unloading and hauling them away to Luther's neighbors. "How much?" Luther asked.
$90, answered Randy. "We had to go up a little 'cause our supplier went up, too."
"80 last year," Luther almost said, but held his tongue. Nora materialized from nowhere and suddenly had her chin on his shoulder.
"They're so cute," she whispered.
"The boys are the trees," Luther almost asked. Why couldn't she stay in the kitchen and let him slug his way through this one? With a big fake smile, Luther said,
"Sorry, but we're not buying one this year."
Blank faces. Puzzled faces. Sad faces. A groan from just over his shoulder as the pain hit Nora. Looking at the boys, with his wife literally breathing down his neck, Luther Crank knew that this was the pivotal moment. Snap here and the floodgates would open. Buy a tree, then decorate it, then realize that no tree looks complete without a pile of presents stuffed under it. "Hang tough, old boy," Luther urged himself, just as his wife whispered, "Oh, dear."
"Hush!" he hissed from the corner of his mouth.
The boys stared up at Mr. Crank, as if he'd just taken the last coins from their pockets.
"Sorry we had to go up in the price," Randy said sadly. "We're making less per tree than last year," Mr. Scanlon added helpfully.
"It's not the price, boys," Luther said with another bogus grin. "We're not doing Christmas this year. Gonna be out of town. No need for a tree. Thanks anyway." The boys began looking at their feet, as wounded children will do, and Mr. Scanlon appeared to be heartbroken. Nora offered another pitiful groan, and Luther, near panic, had a brilliant thought.
"Don't you boys go out west each year for a big campery of some sort, New Mexico in August, I seem to recall from a flyer?"
They were caught off guard, but all three nodded slowly.
"Good, here's the deal. I'll pass on the tree, but you guys come back in the summer, and I'll give you $100 for your trip."
Randy Bogan managed to say, "Thanks," but only because he felt obligated. They suddenly wanted to leave. Luther slowly closed the door on them, then waited. They stood there on the front steps for a moment or two, then retreated down the drive, glancing over their shoulders. When they reached the truck, another adult in uniform was told the bizarre news. Others heard it, and before long, activity around the trailer came to a halt as the scouts and their leaders grouped at the end of the Crank's driveway and stared at the Crank house as if aliens were on the roof. Luther crouched low and peeked around the open curtains of the living room.
"What are they doing?" Nora whispered behind him, crouching too.
"Just staring, I guess."
"Maybe we should have bought one."
"No."
"Don't have to put it up, you know. Quiet. Just keep it in the backyard."
"Stop it, Nora.
Why are you whispering? This is our house."
"Same reason you're hiding behind the curtains."
He stood straight and closed the curtains. The scouts moved on, their trailer inching down the street as the trees on Hemlock Street were delivered. Luther built a fire and settled into his recliner for some reading, tax stuff. He was alone because Nora was pouting, a short spell that would be over by morning. If he'd faced down the Boy Scouts, then who should he fear? More encounters were coming, no doubt, and that was one of the very reasons Luther disliked Christmas. Everybody selling something, raising money, looking for a tip,
a bonus, something, something, something. He grew indignant again and felt fine. He eased from the house an hour later. On the sidewalk that bordered Hemlock, he shuffled along, going nowhere. The air was cool and light. After a few steps, he stopped by the Becker's mailbox and looked into the front window of the living room not far away. They were decorating their tree. Then he could almost hear the bickering. Ned Becker was balancing himself on the top rung of a small ladder and stringing lights, while Jude Becker stood back a step and carped directions. Jude's mother, an ageless wonder, even more terrifying than Jude herself, was also in on the fray. She was pointing directions to poor Ned, and her directions were in sharp conflict to those of Jude. String them here, string them there. That branch, no, that other branch. Can't you see that gap there? What on earth are you looking at? Meanwhile, Rocky Becker, their 20-year-old dropout, was sitting on the sofa with a can of something, laughing at them and offering advice that was apparently being ignored. He was the only one laughing, though. The scene made Luther smile. It reinforced his wisdom, made him proud of his decision to simply avoid the whole mess. He shuffled along, filling his haughty lungs with the cool air, happy that for the first time in his life he was eliminating the dreaded ritual of the tree trimming. Two doors down he stopped and watched the Frohmeyer clan assault an 8-foot spruce. Mr. Frohmeyer had brought two kids to the marriage. Mrs. Frohmeyer had arrived with three of her own, after which they produced another, making 6, the eldest of which was no more than 12. The entire brood was hanging ornaments and tinsel. At some point during every December, Luther overheard one of the neighborhood women comment on just how awful the Frohmeyer tree looked, as if he cared. Awful or not, they were certainly having a wonderful time draping it with tacky decorations. Frohmeyer did research at the university. $110,000 a year was the rumor, but with 6 kids, there wasn't much to show for it. Their tree would be the last to come down after New Year's. Luther turned around and headed home. At the Beckers, Ned was on the sofa with an ice pack on his shoulder, Jude hovering over him, lecturing with her finger. The latter was on its side, being inspected by the mother-in-law. Whatever the cause of the fall, there was no doubt that all blame would be placed on poor Ned. Great, thought Luther. Now I'll have to listen to details of another ailment for the next 4 months. Come to think of it, Ned Becker had fallen off that ladder before, 5, maybe 6 years earlier. Crashed into the tree and knocked the whole thing over. Broke Jude's keepsake ornaments. She'd pouted for a year. What madness, thought Luther. 4. Nora and two friends had just captured a table at their favorite deli, a converted service station that still sold gas but had also added designer sandwiches and latte at $3 a cup. As always, it was packed at noon, and the long lines attracted even more folks. It was a working lunch. Candy and Mary were the other two members of committee to oversee an auction for the art museum. Around most of the other tables, similar fundraisers were being plotted with great effort. Nora's cell phone rang. She apologized because she had forgotten to turn it off, but Mary insisted she take the call anyway. Cell phones were buzzing all over the deli. It was Aubie again, and at first she was puzzled as to how he had obtained her number, but then she routinely gave it away. "It's Aubie from the pumpkin seed," she explained to Candy and Mary, thereby linking them to the conversation. They nodded with disinterest. Presumably everybody knew Aubie from the pumpkin seed. He had the highest prices in the world, so if you shopped there, you could one-up anyone when it came to stationery. "We forgot to discuss your party invitations," Aubie said, and Nora's heart froze. She, too, had forgotten the invitations, and she certainly didn't want to discuss them in front of Mary and Candy. "Oh, yes," she said. Mary had struck up a conversation with a volunteer at the next table. Candy was scanning the deli to see who wasn't there.
We won't be needing them either," Nora said.
"No party?" Aubie asked, his words laden with curiosity.
"Yes, no party this year."
"Well, thanks for calling, Aubie," she said softly and quickly, and snapped the phone shut.
"Won't be needing what?"
Mary asked, suddenly breaking off her other conversation and honing in on Nora.
"No party this year?" Candy asked,
her eyes locking onto Nora's like radar.
"What's up?"
"Grit your teeth," Nora urged herself. "Think of beaches, warm, salt water, 10 days in paradise."
"Oh, that," she said. "We're taking a cruise this year instead of doing Christmas. Blair's gone, you know. We need a break."
The deli was suddenly quiet. Or at least it seemed so to Nora. Candy and Mary frowned as they replayed this news. Nora, with Luther's words ringing in her ears, pushed the offensive. 10 days on the Island Princess, a luxury liner. Bahamas, Jamaica, Grand Cayman. I've already lost 2 pounds, she said with a cheerful smugness.
You're not doing Christmas? Mary said in disbelief.
That's what I said, Nora responded. Mary was quick with the judgment, and years ago Nora had learned to bite back. She stiffened, ready for a sharp word.
How do you simply not do Christmas? Mary asked.
You skip it, Nora replied, as if that would explain everything.
Sounds wonderful, Candy said.
Then what do we do Christmas Eve? Mary asked.
You'll think of something, Nora replied. There are other parties.
But none like yours.
You're sweet.
When do you leave? Candy asked, dreaming now of beaches and no in-laws piled in for a week.
Christmas Day, around noon.
It was an odd time to leave, she had thought after Luther had booked the cruise. If we're not celebrating Christmas, dear, she said, why not leave a few days earlier? Avoid Christmas Eve while we're at it. Eliminate the whole crazy mess.
What if Blair calls Christmas Eve? He'd replied. And besides, Biff got $399 knocked off the package because few people travel on the 25th. Anyway, it was booked and paid for, and nothing was going to change.
Then why not have the party on Christmas Eve anyway? Mary asked, getting pushy, fearful that she might feel obligated to host a replacement.
Because we don't want to, Mary. We're taking a break, okay? A year off. No Christmas whatsoever. Nothing. No tree. No turkey. No gifts. We're taking the money and splurging on a cruise. Get it?
I get it, Candy said.
I wish Norman would do something like that. He wouldn't dream of it, though. Afraid he'd miss 20 or so bowl games.
I'm so envious, Nora.
And with that, Mary took a bite of her avocado sandwich. She chewed and began glancing around the deli.
Nora knew exactly what she was thinking. Who can I tell first? The Cranks are skipping Christmas. No party, no tree, nothing but money in their pockets so they can blow it on a cruise.
Nora ate too, knowing that as soon as she stepped through the door over there, the gossip would roar through the deli, and before dinner, everyone in her world would know the news.
So what? She told herself.
It was inevitable, and why was it such a big deal? Half would be in Candy's camp, burning with envy and dreaming along with Nora. Half would be with Mary, seemingly appalled at the notion of simply eliminating Christmas. But even within this group of critics, Nora suspected many would secretly covet their cruise. And in 3 months, who'd care anyway? After a few bites, they shoved their sandwiches aside and brought out the paperwork. Not another word was mentioned about Christmas. Not in Nora's presence, anyway. Driving away, she phoned Luther with the news of their latest victory. Luther was up and down. His secretary, a 50-year-old triple divorcee named Dox, had quipped that she'd have to buy her own cheap perfume, she supposed, since Santa wasn't coming this year. He'd been called Scrooge twice, and each time the name had been followed by a fit of laughter. How original, Luther thought. Late in the morning, Yank Slater darted into Luther's office as if angry clients were chasing him. Peeking out first, he closed the door, then assumed a seat.
"You're a genius, old boy," he said almost in a whisper.
Yank was an amortization specialist, afraid of a shadow, loved 18-hour days because his wife was a brawler.
"Of course I am," said Luther. "I went home last night late, got the wife to bed, then did the same thing you did. I crunched the numbers, went through the bank statements, the works, came up with almost $7,000.
What was your damage?"
"Just over $6,000.
"Unbelievable, and not a rotten thing to show for it. Makes me sick."
"Take a cruise," Luther said, knowing full well that Yank's wife would never agree to such foolishness.
For her, the holidays began in late October and steadily gathered momentum until the Big Bang, a 10-hour marathon on Christmas Day with 4 meals and a packed house.
"Take a cruise," Yank mumbled. "I can't think of anything worse. Socked away on a boat with Abigail for 10 days, I'd pitch her overboard."
And no one would blame you, Luther thought.
$7,000, Yank repeated to himself.
"Ridiculous, isn't it?" Luther said. And for a moment, both accountants silently lamented the waste of hard-earned money.
"Your first cruise?" Yank asked.
"Yes."
"Never done one myself. Wonder if they have single folks on board."
"I'm sure they do. There's no requirement you have to take a partner."
"Thinking of going solo, Yank?" Not thinking, Luther, dreaming.
He drifted off, his hollow eyes showing a hint of hope, of fun, of something Luther had never seen before in Yank. He left the room there for a moment, his thoughts running wildly across the Caribbean, so wonderfully alone without Abigail. Luther was quiet while his colleague dreamed, but the dream soon became slightly embarrassing. Fortunately, the phone rang, and Yank was jolted back to a harsh world of amortization tables and a quarrelsome wife. He got to his feet and seemed to be leaving without a word. At the door, though, he said, "You're my hero, Luther." Vic Frohmeyer had heard the rumor from Mr. Scanlon, the scoutmaster, and from his wife's niece, who roomed with a girl who worked part-time for Aubie at the pumpkin seed, and from a colleague at the university whose brother got his taxes done by someone at Wiley and Beck. Three different sources, and the rumor had to be true.